Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stupp from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this interview, recorded on a walk on the Wiltshire Downs in April 2010, we talked to Dawn Vernon, instrumental in the development of the Walking for Health project. And what's been your role in walking?
About 17 years ago, I left teaching and went into health promotion. And it was just about that time that the Health Education Authority decided that it might be quite important to promote exercise. And previous to that, exercise hadn't really been thought of as an important component of health promotion. And then there was a campaign called Active for Life, which was promoted by, again, the Health Education Authority. They were promoting the whole message of 30 minutes of moderate activity five times a week, which was a change from the previous recommendation, was that you had to be exercising vigorously and get quite out of breath. So that was good, because this was what we now call a moderate message, and walking fitted into that really nicely.
Were you solely responsible for walking, or did you have a wider remit?
I had a much wider remit, mainly. My remit at that time in 93 was to work with GPs. We set up an exercise prescription, or an exercise referral. 14 leisure centres took part in that scheme, and so all the GPs were encouraged to send patients to one or other of these centres. And mostly they were gym-based exercise classes that people were sent to. Some were aqua aerobics, but we did set up a walking club at the county ground in Swindon. That was just walking round the 400 metre track. And when we did the research at the end, after 18 months, we looked at the adherence rate, in other words, whether people had stuck at it or not. We found that, believe it or not, the walking programme down at the county ground had them by far the biggest success rate, and that people were really sticking to that walking programme. Might have sounded very boring, but they had a wonderful instructor who was very inspiring, and they had an incentive scheme, and they gave people certificates when they'd walked the equivalent of the distance to London. That sort of sowed the seed for me that actually walking was going to get people being active for a longer period of time, not just for short periods and then giving it up. So it's much more sustainable.
So you were basically working in Swindon alone, or across Wiltshire itself, or more broadly?
In Swindon alone at that point, and then I moved to Salisbury. So I came up with the idea that, you know, let's promote short local walks in Salisbury, and got people like Andrew Stupp as part of TravelWise, and local ramblers who were very interested in promoting walking to people that hadn't previously walked. We set up a forum and devised 10 local walks around Salisbury, none of which were more than an hour. Some were only 20 minutes to 30 minutes. And basically it was a pack that GPs could give out, or could be given out at the library, so that people could look where they could walk locally. But this was what we'd call independent walking. It wasn't actually group walking at that point. So we launched this pack on March the 4th, 97, I think, with a ridiculous slogan called March 4th on the 4th of March. And it poured with rain, but we got hundreds of people out. We got the Dean of the Cathedral, and had a lovely launch in the Guildhall, and William Byrd, sort of the mastermind behind health walks, came and spoke, and also somebody called Arden, who's very well known in the exercise field. So we had a huge turnout of people, not just professionals but volunteers and all sorts of people. So it was really, it went from strength to strength at that point.
And they were called the Dorset Walks.
Yes, that's right.
You know, we're actually on a doorstep walk, or at least we think we're on a doorstep walk.
We weren't sure, were we?
We weren't sure when we turned up, but there are at least 20-25 people who've come out on a lovely sunny day in April, and here we are in Wiltshire, not far from your territory.
Yes,
this was
right.
Your territory.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
So some of the route we're walking was a route that you and volunteers devised.
Yes.
about 15 years ago.
As the doorstep walks became so popular, in fact, I had to do an evaluation of the doorstep walks, and that turned out that the whole project had actually been very successful. That GPs were very keen to promote this. Whilst not all GPs were, but we got quite a number who were actively sort of promoting and giving out these packs of walks. We came up with lots of other ideas as well, like the idea of bus walks and intercity walks, and so it sort of spread, didn't it, really?
How did you get involved in a national programme for health walking? What was your motivation also in getting involved? Why did you want the bigger picture?
The whole service had become a countywide service, so I'd been involved with you, Andrew, and other people in setting up doorstep walks all over the county. So I think we had about 12 or 13 little towns, villages with doorstep walks going on everywhere. So I became sort of the person buzzing around trying to help set these up and make them sustainable. You know, we had the Trowbridge Forum, which after 6 months we withdrew and let them get on with it, and we think that's still going. So we're very mindful that we weren't going to be there forever. But along at that time, the Countryside Commission, as it then was, with the British Heart Foundation, were looking to set up a national walking initiative. I often was quite amazed that I got down to a shortlist of six people for an interview in British Heart Foundation up in London. So anyway, about a week later, I got a phone call to say, well, we haven't offered you the job. And so I laughed and said, no, I didn't think you would have done. She said, but we would like you to join us, and we have found some extra money, because we were divided on the interview panel. Two of us wanted you and two of us wanted Peter Ashcroft, who was the insider who came up with the whole idea. Initially, it was Peter who thought, wouldn't it be great to set up a national initiative? So they had given him the job, and that was such a sensible decision, because he was the guy that wrote all the bids for lottery money, which I would have really struggled with. And they decided to find extra money to employ me for a year to be like their health consultant. And it was a brilliant partnership, because Peter and I came from totally different backgrounds, got on terribly well. During that time, it became pretty obvious that if we were going to set up health walks, particularly lead health walks, there was going to be quite a lot of training.
When did the decision come in about having lead walks rather than just independent walking, or was that always in the mix?
It was always in the mix. We'd actually found it quite difficult in Salisbury to get volunteers to come along, if you remember. So really, the whole National Walking for Health initiative was about promoting independent walking and lead walking. But because there was, I think, about £50,000 worth of money initially, it was decided that we would set up three demonstration projects. One was in Eastbourne, which was doing measured walks along the seafront, based along the Schlina Slanty Irish formula. And so that was more about independent walking down in Eastbourne, but there were also two projects set up in Leicester and Walsall. And they were trying to get groups of volunteers to come out and lead walks for local people, because environmentally it wasn't such an attractive place to walk. So we had some parks that they could walk in, but that was about it, really. And it soon became obvious that these leaders were going to need some basic training.
You stepped up to the mark.
Well, yes, that was a bit difficult, because it was a bit sort of a blank sheet of paper. So what is a volunteer leader going to need to know? Probably going to need a manual that they can refer to, probably need the basics of a day about how to lead a safe walk and how they can get people to come along, but to keep them coming along. So I devised a day, which we tested here in Wiltshire, actually. March 99, I think, we ran our first course in Urchmont and had a group of volunteers, interestingly mainly very keen walkers. It became quite a job to actually explain that there were an awful lot of people out there, probably 90% of the population, that either didn't want to walk or didn't know where to walk, and to persuade these volunteers that it was a totally different approach. It wasn't like the Ramblers and putting up a poster and just getting people to come because they love walking. We were trying to get people get started walking, never walked, so it's a complete challenge. It's a sort of learning curve for all of us, really. And what was very interesting at the time is, because William Byrd was involved, and of course his scheme had always started their walks with stretches and finished the walks off with stretches, and being encouraged by the British Heart Foundation and by Loughborough that actually, yes, we should be starting off the walks with a warm-up and a cool-down, And there we were, sort of leading walks from a bus stop, and there were people standing on one leg and doing stretches, and people were looking at this group thinking, what on earth are they doing? And it was really intimidating and putting off the sort of people that we wanted to come. So that was sort of very quickly scrapped. I mean, that was going to be such a disincentive. I mean, we had did put together a video for Walking for Health, and I had to fight very hard to get taken off the video, men in a park standing on one leg and holding onto a tree. So you had those sort of battles. It's really about the battle between the fitness industry and the medical model, and just going out and walking. It's an easy, simple activity that everybody can do. So it was that tension to start with. I think we overcame that, and I think that's been part of the success, is that it's something everybody can do.
Well, let's explore the success then, because, yeah. I mean, it's an incredible 10 years. I mean, yes. If you say that the sort of first training course was 1999, we're in 2010 now. Can you try and explain how it all came about?
I think everybody was struggling with how are we going to get people more active, and this was actually a great accessible way of getting people more active. I think the demonstration projects, we actually had quite a lot of examples of people that we've got out there, individual success stories with people. You probably remember that wonderful woman Betty, who'd lost 3 or 4 stone up in Manchester. Mm-hmm. Her confidence had become, she'd then become part of the group. We've got lots of wonderful success stories. It was about, we'd reached some of the people that had always been very difficult to reach. I think it was the accessibility of it, the fact that it was free, it was fun and it was social, and they didn't need any particularly special equipment. Everybody could do it.
So can you tell me a little bit about your specific role as a trainer and how the training developed?
Yes, I suppose after we'd set up the demonstration projects, we then actually, through Peter Ashcroft, managed to get a grant, a huge lottery grant of $7 million, which was to be spread over 5 years. And which it was enabling us then to roll it out across England. And there was a case officer in every region. There were grants available to the local schemes, and I think that was one of the keys to success. And so then we had a huge number of people now who were saying, well, how am I going to do it? We haven't got a clue how to set it up. And that was brilliant, because I actually started what was a 2-day training course called the Scheme Initiators Course, which enable people to find out why they were doing it, how to do it, how to promote independent walking and put together independent walking packs, how to recruit volunteers, which I suppose we delivered about 40 of those courses. So in other words, trained about 1,000 professionals over a period of about 3 years. There was a complete mix of people from health to, as you say, local authority. And I think it was that mix that all helped us learn from each other, which was brilliant, really. So that gave those people the skills to go back to actually start setting up their own projects. And of course then, as they started wanting to organise lead walks, they needed volunteers, and those volunteers needed training.
Right.
So this huge budget, it seemed huge at the time, but it was over 5 years. At that time we thought it might all end, which is amazing. We're here 10 years later, but there was all this demand for the volunteers to be trained, so I needed to get together a team of trainers who could. I couldn't do it all on my own, so over a period of about 18 months I selected a group of about 10 people who were geographically located all around the country, and I trained them up. They came and watched me run a course, and then I went and watched them run a course, and then they were let off, and they were. It was a wonderful position to be in, because I was able to choose my own team. And so I had some very sort of charismatic, brilliant trainers who earned a lot of respect around the country. And so it really went from there, I suppose, and it just grew almost exponentially. And if we looked at the figures,
it got to a point, did it not, where you couldn't actually train enough people fast enough. So you then developed a sort of cascade training model.
We had to think creatively about how else we could continue it. And I'd seen similar models, but not quite the same, where we trained the people on the ground who were actually running the schemes to actually train their own volunteers. So devised this system of what we call cascade training. And that was very successful. It was very hard to start with, because I was the only one doing it. There was only sufficient money for me to be doing it. And we've had a system whereby we've identified people that have needed more help, really, that the day's training wasn't sufficient. So we would go out and co-train with them and help them and mentor them and be on the end of a phone they have any problems and questions. I think generally it's been a success because they've been able to adapt the course to local needs, which we weren't always able to do with my team of national trainers if they were just parachuted in.
What sort of numbers have you ended up training? I mean, what's the...
I think since the beginning of 2004, we've trained up about 500 Cascade trainers.
Wow. And they're training volunteers.
Yes.
Maybe...
And that's why we got to the sum, princely sum of having trained 40,000.
40,000 volunteer walk leaders.
Yes.
Incredible.
Over that time, and it's huge, Andrew, isn't it?
It's incredible.
I mean, even if we say only half of those are still
phenomenal.
Yeah. And
that's a war effort, that is.
But still, interestingly, friends ask me what I do, and I
mobilising the troops on the ground.
But people still haven't heard about it. I mean, there's still a huge job we have to do out there of actually sort of marketing this so that more people hear about it. Because everybody who's involved is really, you know, so loves it and gets so involved in it. I mean, Pam here today is a superb, you know, she's been leading walks now for 13 years. It's amazing, really.
You know, looking back over those 12 years or 15 years, 17 years, you said back to 1993, is there anything you'd do differently now if you had the time again?
I think we do need to give much more support to the schemes on the ground. And I think it's actually almost becoming now, too big is probably the wrong word, but, you know, it's these schemes, it's these volunteers who are the people out the bread and butter, otherwise this wouldn't happen. And I think there is a danger of bureaucracy sort of creeping in. I think that's always the problem when a scheme becomes successful, more people are employed, but their roles may not be that clearly defined, but what we forget is what the people have been doing, like Pam here for 13 years, and without Pam and without the people all around the country doing that, I think they need more support. How we do that, I'm not so sure. Going to get bigger and better, I think it's got to start from the ground up.
But the good news, though, is that Natural England and the Department of Health have secured funding to run the scheme nationally further into the future.
Yes, 3 years, I think, though money's only been confirmed for the first year at the moment. Because it's been such a success and Department of Health has seen this as an effective way of getting the population more active, and it doesn't need to cost very much, but they're investing quite a big sum in expanding the scheme. I think the initial idea was that every GP practice in the country would have a health walk scheme.
I'm quite interested in your own personal motivations, okay? So we've sort of talked about all the things that have been going on, and you've talked about how important it is to support people on the ground and really support those people who are passionate and enthusiastic and driven, and you're passionate, enthusiastic and driven, so come on, where does the drive come from? Where did you find support?
I was a PE teacher for nearly 20 years, and I suppose I'm a bit driven and a firm advocate. Just feel great when I'm exercising, and always run and played different sports, but now as I get older I find walking, it's just a great way of getting out with the family and husband, and just enjoying countryside. There's so much more to it than just the physical side of things. And so, yeah, we walk regularly at weekends and walk most mornings for an hour, and done various charity events with friends. A very good friend of mine had, 2 years before, had quite radical breast cancer surgery, and she was... said to me, "Oh, I'm going to do the ribbon walk." I said, "Oh, what's that?" And she said, "Oh, it's around Blenheim Palace, 20 miles, raising money for breast cancer." But that was inspirational, because we walked around Blenheim Palace and it was a stream of women in pink. That was wonderful, being with so many people who had been sufferers, really. So, and then last year, a group of us, about nine of us, decided to do some distance, but through the night, which the body doesn't like very much. And again, that was an amazing experience. I think there was something like 18,000 women all in pink bras over their T-shirts. Fabulous atmosphere. I started in Hyde Park and walked through the night. And again, it's wonderful to be part of something like that.
What I usually ask people is whether they can recommend a walk.
A walk we love down from Swanage, getting the steam train up to Corfe, and then walking all the way back along the ridgeline where you can see Bournemouth and the Isle of Wight, and then down into, onto Studland Beach, and then round Old Harry and back to Swanage and back to where you started. And I mean, that's, I suppose, a bit like our bus walks, but the scenery there is just so stunning. I mean, that's only about an hour and a half away from here.
And how long is the walk itself?
Probably about three hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah, a few steep bits, but no, just lovely. But I mean, round here is just so fabulous. I mean, the views we've got today, the Salisbury Plain is a much sort of missed region, I think,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Dawn Vernon. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited. Our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.